court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
And I am just a dude. An ethically challenged dude, apparently.
Nah, you did great last episode.
50%?
Hey.
That's not even a C. I was at least a C student in school. I strived to get a C.
I told you the bell curve. We scaled you up to 100%.
Well, that's pretty good when I'm the only one. But, I mean, I always felt like a C was okay. That's average. I'm an average guy. So, nothing's wrong with a C. But... A 50% never got you a C in school in any grading scale I know of.
Hey, half the time it's right all the time.
Well, that's true. And I also read on a Holiday Inn sign that 90% of success is just showing up. So at least I'm here.
There you go. Well, August 1st, 2016. Do you know where you were?
Let's see. August 1st, 2016. I have absolutely no idea.
Well, I was sitting in front of my computer. I thought I'd log into iTunes and see if there are any new reviews for this new podcast I just started with my brother-in-law, Tommy.
Oh.
So I took a sip of my coffee, popped open my MacBook Air, just trying to escape the monotony of the legal practice with my new side gig, my podcast. I thought to myself, oh, look, there's a new review. Oh, it's only one star. Uh-oh, our first bad review. Well, let's see, what does it say? This podcast tries to be Sawbones for the law, but succeeds only in regaling the listener with a half hour of drivel. Don't waste your time. Well, I'm here to say that we showed you our episodes are much longer now, and we regale our listeners with at least 45 minutes to an hour of drivel.
That's right.
So, yeah.
We have drivel round the clock.
So, that was our first bad review, and it stung.
It was, we almost just hung it up right there, didn't we? After episode one or two, whatever it was, when that came in.
But you know what we didn't
We've do? Referred to it several times.
We have. I haven't actually given the full language of it.
What does not kill me makes me stronger.
That's right. But what we didn't do is we did not turn around and try to sue the person to make him shut up about it.
No, we didn't try to post terrible things back about him or whatever.
No.
Call him out or something like that.
So I thought this episode might be kind of fun to talk about when there's been lawsuits over bad reviews or suing people for giving kind of bad reviews. So,
well, it's, you know, in this day and age of freedom of speech, you wouldn't think that there'd be such a thing.
That's true. Speaking of which, before I forget about it, if you haven't had a chance to review us on iTunes, we sure would appreciate a good review.
Balance out that bad one from August 1st of 2016.
That's right. Come on, help us out. Let's bury that thing.
That's the only thing you can do, just accumulate other good ones. Well, encourage your loyal listeners that do enjoy your drivel to get on there and write something good. Huh?
That's right. One of the things that really, when I think about this issue... I don't know if you've ever seen the show Kitchen Nightmares with Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, I don't think it's been on in a long time, but I used to watch it when it was. And he'd come in and help straighten out the restaurant that was failing or whatever.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I love that show. I used to watch it all the time. But there was one episode.
That and Bar Rescue. I used to watch Bar Rescue too. Same general premise, but it was with bars instead of restaurants.
And some guy named John Tapper who was really loud and aggressive.
Yeah, and he just intentionally pissed people off.
Yeah. Well, Gordon Ramsay was a bit more disarming, I think. But
well, you can get away with a lot more when you have an English accent.
That's true.
That just makes it. What are you, some kind of moron? That wasn't even an English accent. Where was I?
Oh, you donkey. Rustic.
Bloody hell.
He always said, rustic, honest, local, simple, fresh.
That's your mantra.
Yeah. Well, anyway, he came to this one place called Amy's Baking Company. It was in Arizona. And, man, that place was just, it was crazy. Like, the owners were yelling and screaming at people. They kept blaming their bad business on the Yelpers, and they kept calling people Yelpers in their business. And really, once that episode aired, it went kind of, it became like a internet phenomenon for a while, because people would post things on their face, on the Amy's Baking Company Facebook, and I actually started following just because of it, and they would respond and like argue with people, and they replied on Yelp, and they would constantly argue, and it was just, it was really entertaining. I actually never posted anything about them, but I did enjoy reading them all. But anyway, they kind of basically forgot about the first rule of the internet with regard to that. Don't feed the trolls.
I always remember a cartoon that I saw one time that somebody showed me, and it was a guy sitting there in front of his computer and his wife saying, "Come on, it's time to go to bed." And he says, "Wait a minute, I disagree with something somebody said on the internet."
Yeah, there's somebody who's wrong on the internet.
Yeah, I gotta fix it before I go to bed.
Yeah, so...
yeah, good luck.
I don't think there was any kind of a lawsuit that was ever filed as a result of Amy's Baking Company, but it was in the news for quite some time, and then they had another episode about, like, where are they now?
Yeah, they did. Stuff. They had another episode, and they were still just as resistant. I mean, he would come in and tell them, here's what you need to do, and they're like, screw you, we're not going to do that. Why am I here?
Yeah. Yeah, and that was definitely one of the craziest episodes of that I'd ever seen. If you haven't, I think I actually bought that one on my iTunes account,
so I could watch it again. Yeah, they didn't want any help. I think they were struggling too because they had gotten so much bad publicity.
Yeah, I think he one of the things he didn't like about it was that they kind of did a little bit of false advertising on the menu because they said everything was fresh. They came to find out that a lot of it was like bought pre-made, and they just kind of
their definition was different. It's like, well, how can you say that's fresh? Well, I just got it out of the freezer today.
Yeah,
it's been in the freezer up till now.
But that was basically the gist of all the reviews. Well, not all the reviews, but because once the snowball started rolling down the mountain, I mean, all bets were off. The reviews were horrible.
Everybody's going to jump in on it then.
Yeah, there were people that hadn't even eaten there before just going off on these people.
Because they wanted to see what they said.
Yeah, I kind of felt bad for them a little bit, but they did pretty much bring it upon themselves quite a bit. Now, one place, as I mentioned earlier, it seems to be like kind of a lightning rod for this kind of dispute and things like that is Yelp. Are you familiar with Yelp?
Well, let me put it this way. I have never personally used it because I don't navigate phones that well to be able to pull it up and look at it.
Yeah.
But I have heard it referred to while traveling with my family, and they've checked on Yelp reviews before we go places. So I'm familiar with what it does. I've just never done it in practice. I can do emails. I can do texting, and I can answer the phone. That's about it.
So you don't have the Yelp app on your phone?
No, I do not.
All right. I do. And I use Yelp whenever I'm traveling or out of town to try to find someplace. And sometimes even in town, if I'm just trying to figure out someplace different to go eat lunch or dinner or something like that. Now, I've actually never left a review on Yelp, but I'm not a reviewer.
You're not above it, though, are you?
No, I would do it.
If you really felt strongly one way or another, would you?
Yeah, probably.
So everywhere you've been has just been mediocre, I guess, huh?
No, I mean, there's been a lot of places I've really liked. some places I haven't liked, and I've never left reviews. So, I mean,
they would really have to offend you before you would take the time to leave a review, right?
Yeah, but I would like to think that if I really liked them as well, that I would take the time to leave a review, too.
But yet you haven't. So you haven't liked anywhere you've been.
I have. I might give it 5 stars, but I would not take the time to pin a review.
Why not? If you felt passionate about it one way or another.
I don't feel passionate about many things.
When it comes to food, I can get my passion on. I just don't know how to Yelp about it. I don't have the app.
Yeah. Well, it's a good app, and it helps you find places that are on there. But
it'll Yelp you out, huh?
Yeah, and people that use Yelp, I think, are called Yelpers is the way you describe them.
Unless you leave a bad one, then they'll call you a Yelp hole.
But you could imagine that how if you were possibly able to be sued over leaving a bad review for a restaurant or something like that, how that could really kind of make you not want to leave a bad review.
Well, here's the one thing. I mean, they can't. I don't see how they could sue you over your opinion, because your opinion is your opinion and it can't be right or wrong. It's just your opinion. And if they say, well, it's not true, well, it's my opinion. How can you tell me my opinion's not true? So unless you just made things up, you can pretty much say anything you want to say.
Well, yeah, we went over this before when we talked about defamation and slander before. And that's essentially when you sue somebody for a review like that. The theory being is that it comes under a defamation or a slander kind of cause of action, that you're basically saying some sort of statement that is injurious to the party, and they're have some sort of damages to them or something like that. That would basically be the whole theory of liability.
But if you ate somewhere and you said, the meal I had was one of the worst meals I've ever eaten, I just thought it was terrible, I don't know what all the fuss was about to eat here, I didn't enjoy the meal, nobody can come back and say it's defamatory. They may not feel it's true. They might think everything they serve is great. But how can you tell this person that they're a liar?
Yeah, and that's somebody's opinion. They might not like it. And also, as we've talked about before, not always, because there is some small exceptions, but truth is almost always an absolute defense to any kind of defamation or slander. So if in fact, you go somewhere and the food comes out cold, and you say the food was served cold, and it was, in fact, served cold, you're fine. You can't get in trouble for that. Now, there could be some real burden of proof issues in there, like to say, hey, how do we know it came out cold?
But, you know, there's another law that comes into play with that. We've covered that before, too, as far as internet providers not being responsible for what they leave or what information is displayed on there.
Right. We were talking about, like, if in particular, like, this restaurant decided to sue Yelp in particular, not right. just the person who left the review.
Right.
Yeah. I guess the theory being that they're providing some sort of, or facilitating some avenue for people to post these kinds of things, so therefore they would be liable as well. I think that's really hard. That's a reach.
Well, I think what they do is they call up Yelp and say, hey, this isn't true, and you need to take that down. I consider that defamation. If you don't take that down, I'm going to sue you. And then Yelp has to make the decision, do we take it down, or do we hide behind this thing that says, hey, we don't have to because it's protected?
Yeah, free speech. Mm-hmm. Now, oftentimes, when these cases happen, they might threaten to file a lawsuit.
Right.
And they'll say, hey, we're going to sue you if you don't take this down or whatever, like you just said. Oftentimes, people don't file lawsuits over things like this. It's just kind of an idle threat to try to intimidate somebody into doing it. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that even though they might not prevail on a lawsuit, they are still able to go ahead and file the lawsuit. And this is one of those things when people come in to see me for a consult and they say something along the lines of, well, I'm kind of worried about this. Can this person sue me? I always say yes.
Anybody can sue anybody. Yeah, they might not win. They might not go anywhere, but they can sue you.
Yeah, doesn't mean you're going to lose, but they can sue you. And people's face is always kind of like, when the lawyer tells them they can be sued, is always like, you know, deer in the headlights, like, oh no, I don't want to be sued. But, you know, I mean, that's just and I always tell them, hey, you're sitting across the table from me. I can sue you for anything right now.
Right.
And they're kind of like, oh, I'm not going to say, well, I'm not going to, but...
Gotcha, didn't I?
Psych.
Keeping you on your toes. Meadows, lawyer on his toes.
Sometimes they give you curious looks, but I mean, the bottom line is that, I mean, you can file a ham sandwich and, you know, that's all you got to do. You can sue somebody.
Ham easily. Sandwich jury.
That's right. Speaking of which, all this talk about food and yell is making me hungry.
I know. I'm not going to get through this. I'm thinking of craft beer in there, too. I don't know why. That's fitting in there with these Yelp reviews.
That's right. My one boss said that anybody can file a lawsuit with $500 and an attitude. So,
well, yeah, that's true.
Whatever the filing fee is and an attitude is all you need. Mm-hmm. So, doesn't mean you're going to win. Now, if the lawsuit is kind of frivolous and it's one that's, they basically file it knowing that it's not going to probably win, but they're just trying to make you take down things or intimidate you or cost you money, there's actually a term for those kinds of lawsuits. And I will tell you that term, but I think before we get into that, I think there might be a motion or two.
Well, yes, if it please your lordship, we'd like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
Lordship? My title keeps changing, and it sounds more and more grandeur.
It just grandiose.
Grandiose.
It just kind of, you know, whatever pops into my head on any given day or night, whatever it is. And we're so close to the last time we recorded, since we were late on that one and early on this one, that they just, you know, I didn't want to duplicate. So there you go.
So they decided to innovate.
That's right. Innovate, duplicate. So our first motion is by our good friends from Dollar Shave Club.
I love Dollar Shave Club.
DollarShaveClub.com. I think they've been were our very first advertiser we ever had, and they're still with us.
They are. They've been a long-time sponsor of the podcast.
And I've been using them since day one.
Me too.
Ever since we first got their razors, I've been using them ever since. And their razors are great, and all their products are great. And you can't beat the shave you get.
Absolutely not. It's great. I have a very rugged beard. It's very aggressive.
It's passive aggressive.
Nothing passive about this beard.
You take a weed whacker to that thing.
But the razors and the Dr. Carver shave butter, they cut right through it.
They cut right through the crap.
That's right.
So guys, your bathroom called. It's time to give it the cleaning it deserves. Get rid of all the junk that's lying around. Freshen it up with high quality products from Dollar Shave Club. Members like me, we get everything we need for our morning routine delivered right to our door.
DollarShaveClub.com. They deliver everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. They're more than just razors, and it's way better than shopping in a store.
Now, Dollar Shave Club has razors, shave butter, shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, everything you need to look, smell, and feel your best. And guys, that's what the ladies want.
They got you covered from head to toe and places in between.
Even in the rear.
You get an amazing high-quality shave every morning from your Dollar Shave Club Executive Razor. It's honestly the best razor I've ever used.
Me too.
Their Dr. Carver Shave Butter is fantastic. It goes on clear so you can see where you're shaving. And if you have a beard like me, it's important because you got to keep those lines straight.
Yeah, otherwise you just have to keep cutting it down and cutting it down, trying to straighten it back out.
Nah, that's no good.
Eventually, you got a chin strap beard. Then you'll look like a hipster or something.
I've been looking like a hipster since before hipsters.
And since Dollar Shave Club delivers everything to you, you don't have to set foot in a store. Wandering the aisles, hunting for razor, shampoo, body wash, toothpaste, none of it.
So clean up your bathroom and your morning routine. Join Dollar Shave Club today, and for just $5 with free shipping, you'll get the 6-blade executive razor plus trial sizes of shave butter, body cleansers, and one wipe Charlie's.
For your butt.
Then keep the blades coming for a few bucks more a month.
Get yours at dollarshaveclub.com/court.
That's dollarshaveclub.com/court.
Tell them Mike and Tommy sent you.
Now, our next motion, or next ad, as it were, what we call motions, because we're clever like that, is by Abby Connect.
Abby Connect, the live person answering service for your small to medium-sized business.
That's right. They will help law firms and other small businesses screen, qualify, and convert incoming calls into business.
Did you know that 80% of potential clients don't leave a message when they reach a voicemail? Clients want to connect with real people, not machines or recordings or robots or ne'er-do-wells.
The fact is, in today's world now, if a caller can't reach someone, they're going to call the next company on the list. Voicemail kills business. Calls mean clients. I know whenever I have a phone call and I'm making it to a business, if I get a voicemail, I just hang up and go to the next one. That's true. I can vouch for that.
So it's not libel or defamation because it's the truth.
That's right. You invest in a website and digital advertising, shouldn't you invest in converting those calls into customers?
I'd say the answer to that is yes.
Yeah, otherwise you're just throwing away those advertising dollars because these calls are coming in, you're paying for them to come in, but you're not turning them into business.
Most of us listening to this podcast can't afford to hire a receptionist or assistant. But our sponsor today, Abby Connect, offers dedicated and guaranteed call answering at a fraction of the cost.
Customer care is a necessary and rewarding investment.
You can sleep well at night knowing that Abby Connect is taking care of your calls.
The thing is Abby Connect is the perfect mixture of high-end call reception and cost efficiency. It increases revenue and builds trust through meaningful connections, and that's your Abby receptionist team's goal.
For our listeners, Abby Connect is offering a no-obligation free trial. Sign up today and you'll make missed opportunities a thing of the past.
And after your trial is over, our listeners will receive $95 off their first bill, but only when you sign up at our special link, which is abbyconnect.com/court.
That's abbeyconnect.com/court. And we thank them for their sponsorship of our podcast.
Thanks, Abby.
Thanks, Abby.
So now, the type of lawsuit, when they file it, and it doesn't really have any kind of merit, is called a slap lawsuit.
A slap lawsuit, because they're slapping you down with a lousy review.
Have you ever heard of a slap lawsuit?
Well, actually, I have in researching for this podcast, but I didn't know about it before then. Should I have played dumb? I don't know what it is, Mike. Tell me.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Tommy.
Good, because I'm sitting here just ignorant as hell.
SLAP stands for, that's our mantra.
We're ignorant as hell?
No, you are.
Oh.
SLAP stands for Strategic Lawsuit Against Public Participation. And it was a phrase that was kind of coined out of the 80s by some law professors, I believe.
Sounds like something they'd do.
So how about that?
They probably work for the government because they're always putting acronyms on things.
They are. And I think it's very appropriate, too, because, like you said, it's just meant to slap people down. Basically, there was one judge who said, and I really like this quote talking about slap lawsuits, short of a gun to the head, a greater threat to the First Amendment expression can scarcely be imagined other than slap lawsuits. Because basically, these are lawsuits that have no merit, and they're basically just meant to try to punish and intimidate somebody.
Or to silence you.
Exactly.
Not like in a kill you type thing, but...
That'd be a whole different thing.
Yeah, you'd probably get charged with something worse than a slap.
A lot of times these slap lawsuits, they can be somewhat effective at silencing people's critics. They use like different timing whenever they file the lawsuit. They add extra defendants into the case. They try to... include other people who maybe have no other claim or no other interest in it at all to make it very burdensome and cause a lot of problems. And the way they try to plead these things in the complaint is they put claims in there that are very hard to prove or disprove. And they talk a lot about like things that there's no real evidence of, and it's kind of very theoretical and things like that. So there's kind of an art form to doing it. And what they do, the way they write it, is they're trying to avoid any perjury upon themselves by doing this. Right. But they want to basically meet some basic elements and make some allegations, but not get themselves in trouble. Several jurisdictions have passed legislation about anti-slap lawsuits. And the way these anti-slap legislation works is that there's a special kind of motion that you can file right at the very beginning of the case, which will get it kicked out. And that's the only way to really kind of combat slap lawsuits.
Well, what did you call that before when you have something and you file for like immediate dismissal and there was a term you have for that that's based on like previous case law or something like that?
Well, a motion to dismiss would be the initial thing. There's other motions you can file as well. Under the federal rules, they'd be Rule 12b-6, like jurisdiction-type arguments, things like that. But basically, anything that's on the merits of what's actually filed would probably be a motion to dismiss. There used to be something called a demurrer, and essentially a demurrer, which is a common law term, and it was like, it's basically called the so-what defense. It's like they file a complaint, and you file the demurrer, which means, well, yeah, so what?
So what? There's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah, it doesn't mean anything. And then it would be dismissed that way. That's not really a thing anymore. I think it's kind of not around anymore. That's the archaic term, demur. Mm-hmm. But a motion to dismiss would be the first thing that you would file, essentially. And probably any slap, if you're filing some sort of anti-slap motion to dismiss, that's how you would probably phrase it, as a motion to dismiss.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, there were several that I read, and that was the first step.
Yeah.
Under that law, they basically just filed to dismiss, and it wasn't like they made any argument about how true the statements were or anything else. They just said, hey, based on this, we're filing to dismiss.
Now, if in places that have these kind of anti-slap laws, if you win getting the case dismissed, oftentimes the plaintiff has to pay penalty for bringing the case and also right. attorney's fees. And do you know what those are called, that kind of penalty?
Well, you've told me before, but I can't remember.
Oh, I don't think I've told you before. This is a special term.
Oh, well, I thought you told me before, but I don't remember. I do not know.
It's called a slap back.
A slap back? It is not.
It is.
You're making that up.
I am not.
That sounds like something I'd say.
I know.
Some dumbass thought that up.
Yeah, so you get a slap back. You file a slap suit and a slap back.
You know, sometimes people, when they get a bad Yelp review, they take things into their own hands short of a lawsuit.
Okay.
They think they can go back at people and get them to back down or revoke their own bad review and stuff like that. And that seldom has good consequences.
No, not at all.
there's one, it was a female owner of Ocean Avenue Books in San Francisco, and she got a 2-star rating from a Yelper named Sean. And this apparently was enough to just push her right over the edge. So after several rounds of cyber attacks, she actually went to Yelper Sean's house.
Whoa.
Forced her way in and got into a wrestling match with him. And Sean said, "This is the craziest thing that's ever happened to me. She's lucky I didn't have a gun or she'd probably be dead right now." Now, needless to say, it's a case of bad review management and anger management. And it's
probably mental health issues too.
Well, the owner was cited for battery and taken to a center for mental health intervention.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, here was another one where it was a guy that ran a business in California called the Radiator Doctor. Mm-hmm. And evidently somebody came in and he didn't like the way this guy did business, and he was complaining with everybody and running around. And the guy threw him out. So the guy that got thrown out turned around and wrote a bad review. Well, this guy gets back on the internet defending his business and starts writing about, he calls him, challenges his manhood and says, "Brandon, whatever his name was, you're a little boy. And all you do is go home and hide behind your computer playing the role of internet tough guy. Come on in. I'll meet you anywhere, anytime, and we'll settle this like men." So they say, you know, that's not a good way to handle it either. Don't get back on there and challenge them.
We'll settle this like men.
And then here was another one. It was a pizza place, again, in California. It's in Reno.
That is not in California.
No, that's in Nevada. I thought it was California, but it's Reno.
It's the biggest little town.
I wasn't reading through there fast enough. But this guy left a review about this guy's pizza place and that the pizza was okay, but it had all these crazy things. When I go in to get pizza, I just want pizza. And they got all these hipster toppings on there. And then he went on to criticize the clientele that was in there. You couldn't smell the pizza anyway because of the people that were in there. They're really not people you want to be around. So this guy got on there and he took exception to the hipster toppings and all that kind of stuff that he was throwing around there. And so they went back and forth several times, and that caused damage to his business.
It sounds like the biggest little mistake he ever made.
That's right. And then here's another one in Reno about a guy that ran a place where they did brunch and had bottomless mimosas. And a lady was in there, and she basically said, "I was only there for the bottomless mimosas. If they offer those and you don't have to buy food, that's the only way it's worth going there because the food is terrible. The breakfast food, you could get at IHOP and it's better," and all this kind of stuff. Well, what's interesting about all four of these places and the way they struck back and being passive aggressive and all this kind of stuff, they're all four out of business now.
Yeah. Well, there's one suggestion that I came across, and basically this was on an advice thing from this law website where they review lawyers. And the web administrator for this review site said, "The idea of pursuing a defamation lawsuit over an online posting is about the stupidest thing you can do as a business owner. It simply raises the profile of the issue, it ignores an opportunity to respond to customer feedback, and it lets other consumers feel that you, as a business, are more interested in covering up negative feedback than actually responding to it and addressing it."
Exactly.
And that's the same thing, not just with the lawsuits, but with responding to these claims like that and arguing with somebody. You're actually bringing more
attention
to it.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, if somebody just puts on there, they're regaling you with a half hour of drivel and it just kind of seamlessly falls to the bottom, nobody pays much attention to it, hopefully.
Yeah.
unless they talk about it later in their podcast after it's gotten much more popular.
That was the point of that article. It was saying that every one of these, the way they handled it was the wrong way to handle it. That, you know, you just can't do that kind of thing, and you're bringing more people in. More people are going to jump on the bandwagon, whichever side they're on, it's all going to end up negative.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're going to look bad on it. You're better off just to ignore it and hope that it's a tree falling in the woods.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, by you're almost validating it by going back and forth on it. Now, the way you can do good damage control for this, and I've seen this on some Yelp reviews when I've ever gone to a place, it says like, "Well, you know, I went there and the the pizza was undercooked. The dough felt like it needed to be cooked more, things like that. Then you might go underneath it and see a review, see the response from the company or restaurant. It'll say, sorry, you had a bad experience. My name is so-and-so. I'm the owner. Come back in next time, and you know, we'll talk about it, and hopefully you'll have a good visit.
Yeah, or offer you something free or something like that. Come in and let us give us a chance to make it right. We're sorry, you know, if you had a bad experience. Yeah, you're right. That's the only way that you can handle it. And it can't be any underlying but in there. Yeah, come back in. We'll see if we can make it right. But, you know, if you're going to be picky like that, then don't even bother.
Yeah. You know? The problem is that, you know, I think there are there's a segment of society that tends to kind of take advantage of things like that. You know, I've seen it before in restaurants where people complain about things and try to get things for free and whatnot. But
yeah. Well, and there's some people that they draw a certain amount of power from that, too.
Yeah.
They get on there and they complain about this place and they complain about that place, and that makes them somebody.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Whenever I mean, I don't often do it at restaurants because I'm a little picky about my food and I don't want people to like do something to my food. But if something comes out and it's
exactly
if something comes out and it's just not up to par, you know, I've sent it back before. I don't have a problem with that. I mean, I don't like to do it, but I've done it before.
I'm always afraid of what it'll be when it comes back. I just go without.
Well, one time in particular, I think we were out at dinner. We had a big family kind of get together and I ordered tuna and I wanted it just basically seared and it came out. And I mean, this thing was cooked all the way through. I had to send that back. I was like, not really how I wanted it. Sorry. So, but you know, I mean, I didn't go on Yelp though and talk about it. So now with regards to these lawsuits, and where there is anti-slap or there are slap litigation or slap laws, one venue that you might guess is very progressive about it. You know where it is?
Texas.
No, it is California.
California. That was my second guess.
They basically, back in 1992, enacted the Code of Civil Procedure 425.16, and basically it was to try to stop these slap lawsuits which were being filed. And what it does is, like I said, it provides for a special motion that the defendant can file at the very beginning of the case whenever they allege that the complaint is one of these slap lawsuits. Now, in order to win on one of these anti-slap motions, basically what the defendant has to allege is that the lawsuit is based on claims that are related to constitutionally protected activities, typically First Amendment rights as free speech, and typically seeks to show that the claim lacks any basis of genuine substance, legal underpinnings, evidence, or prospect of success. If this is demonstrated, then what happens is the burden shifts to the plaintiff, the person who filed it, to show the evidence that they actually have a reasonable probability of succeeding in their case, and that an actual wrong would exist as recognized by law if the facts claimed were borne out. So basically the way California takes a look at this, it says, all right, this is going to be this is a slap lawsuit. You file what's called this anti-slap motion, and you show these certain elements that need to be in this anti-slap motion. And when that happens, it puts an extra burden on the plaintiff to show more elements. Because basically when you file a lawsuit, you just have to basically state basic things. You don't have to show anything. But what it does is it makes a higher burden for them to prove more for their lawsuit when it talks about this kind of stuff. Now, one of the interesting things about this and what really is good is that this motion in California, it stays all discovery. And by stay, I mean it says it's not going to go forward. So they can't send you discovery and run up costs and things like that. And really, it's good because it reduces the costs of the slap litigation to the defendant, because that's one of the things that really costs the most is discovery. So it costs a lot. So it's kind of interesting the way it works. Now, if that motion is denied, then that is actually a appealable issue. So normally you can't appeal something until the case is over, but if the anti-slap motion is denied, then that's appealable right away. And if you do win on your motion to get the case tossed out, then you get mandatory and reasonable attorney's fees for having to file that. So, but hopefully they're not very much because there wasn't any discovery or anything like that. So it's pretty interesting. And it says, one of the articles I read said that more than 300 published court opinions have interpreted and applied California's anti-slap law.
It's funny that you mentioned California, because they also right now have a case over Yelp reviews at the California Supreme Court.
Oh yeah?
Yep. It seems that a law firm in 2013 filed suit against someone who left a Yelp review about a law firm, and they asked Yelp to remove it, and Yelp wouldn't remove it, and the person that wrote it wouldn't remove it, and they were saying this was defamatory, it was untrue, and they wanted it taken down. They wouldn't do it, so they took them to court.
Might you be talking about the Hassel v. Bird?
Absolutely.
I came across that when I was getting ready for this podcast.
Yeah, me too. It said that, so they took that to it's up to the Supreme Court. But what had happened is two lower courts have ruled that Yelp does have to remove those and is responsible for removing ones that are damaging, mm-hmm. that are untrue and damaging. So they said that one of the main problems with online reviews when consumers share false negative reviews of a business. And California courts have been presented with legal issues arriving from the use of online forums, specifically whether courts have the power to force any specific forum to take down a defamatory review. And furthermore, courts must address whether any infringement on a consumer's First Amendment right to speech arises if a negative review is declared defamatory.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all in there together. They said that Yelp is optimistic that the California Supreme Court has decided to hear its case because it has given Yelp an opportunity to demonstrate how this decision will have a detrimental effect by restricting the ability of websites to provide a balanced spectrum of views online. Yelp's counsel and other community members argue that this judicial decision will restrict a consumer's First Amendment right to free speech. On the other hand, the law firm's counsel, San Francisco lawyer Monique Oliver, strongly asserts that these false negative reviews, if considered defamatory, are not protected by the First Amendment.
Yeah.
Therefore, there is no infringement on consumers' free speech. So Yelp is concerned that what will happen is it will set people up so that people can seek out Forum Shop in California
mm-hmm.
to try to find ones that will side with them as opposed to ones that will side against them. So that's why they want something to be done that's permanent for all of them, because you're having lower courts ruling different things. And it said Yelp provides that as a publisher of third-party authorized speech, which is what we've gone over before,
mm-hmm.
its First Amendment right to control its own website was violated by this lower court's decision. Furthermore, due to this decision, businesses now have an effective tool in removing unflattering commentary, whereas online entities like Yelp are denied the right to exercise editorial control over what's being published on their own sites.
Yeah.
So they're saying it conflicts in that. So, and there are precedents for that. There are two U.S. Supreme Court cases, Ashcroft v. Free Speech Coalition and Keaton v. Hustler Magazine, that were in the U.S. Supreme Court that have said if the statements are patently false and proven to be defamatory, they're not protected by free speech.
Yeah.
And then also in Supreme Court of California, the Balboa Island Village Inn v. Lemon, L-E-M-E-N, that one was the same way, ruled the same way. So false statements are not protected by freedom of speech.
That's right. They have no value, really.
Right. So you can't protect them.
And you know what's funny is when I was researching this, actually, I went to Yelp and searched up the aforementioned law firm, went through all the reviews, and it's still up there.
Yeah. Well, they won't take it down. That's what the whole – and this lawsuit is still pending. Now, this was filed – the lawsuit was filed in 2013. It went to the Supreme Court in 2016, and it still has not been ruled on.
Oh, really? It's still pending?
It's still pending at the California – and you know what's going to happen whichever way they rule. I will say they're going to appeal it to Supreme Court.
I know that there's a lot of interest from all the other online places like Facebook, things like that, because
exactly.
they're pretty worried about what the ramifications of this might be.
Well, it's a quagmire.
It is a quagmire.
I mean, what do you could argue that either direction about what it is. Yeah, why would you be able to put falsehoods in there and be protected, but at the same account, how can Yelp be responsible for going through and deciding what's false and what's real? I mean, that'd be a big burden to try to go through everything that's coming in. And then if somebody calls and complains, do you take it down?
You know, and with regard to this particular one, it's like I've seen before. There's a ton of really good reviews. And this is the only bad review I even saw on there. And it kind of addresses the points of what they say in there, and it, I think it's fine.
Leave it alone, and it'd just be buried in there, and nobody would know anything about it. But by them filing a court case over it, now everybody knows about it, and they know what was said about it.
Yeah, it's one of those things, too, like, you know, reputation management, online reputation management has become almost a cottage industry for some people because it is a quagmire or a minefield or any other kind of analogy I can come up with.
Quicksand.
Yeah, quicksand.
Now, here's another way that some companies have tried to get around doing this. They add in a non-disparagement clause in the contract that you sign with them. That was their interpretation when you sign this is that you can't leave a negative review about them.
Yeah.
Because you signed that. However, there are several people that have ruled that these are basically illegal.
It's like, here you go, Mr. Schmerl. Here's your plate of spaghetti. But before you eat it, I'm going to need you to sign this this confidentiality agreement regarding the tastiness of my spaghetti.
Well, here's a $1 million lawsuit that arose from a couple in Plano, Texas that hired a pet sitting company to look after their dogs and fish while they were on vacation. They don't say exactly what the troubles were. They just say the customers weren't terribly thrilled about the quality of their service, so they shared feedback publicly on Yelp.
Well, I heard from somebody who was in the know that basically they were walking the fish and
put the dogs in
the dogs in the aquarium. They totally screwed it up.
Maybe they were dogfish. But anyway, the pet sitting company not only responded to that write-up, but they also followed up with a cease and desist notice directing the customers to remove their review. And when they did not take the Yelp post down, the pet sitter filed a lawsuit in the Justice of the Peace Court for about $6,700, accusing the couple of violating the non-disparagement clause.
Yeah.
So it ended up that it kept getting kicked up until it finally went to a state district court. And at that point, the pet sitting company decided, hey, now that we're at this point, we're really being damaged. So they upped the amount they were suing for to $1 million.
Yeah.
So at that point, it had attracted the attention of advocates for consumers' free expression, and they took it up pro bono to help them out. And the end result was that they ruled against the pet sitting company. They had to pay all the court costs for it, so they didn't get anything out of it. The court costs for them, because this is dragged out over a couple of years, ended up being like $65,000 or something like that.
Oh, I had to have attorney's fees and everything.
Oh, yeah, too. Attorney's fees, everything. Court costs, attorney's fees. They had to pay that back to the pet owners. What it ended up doing was putting them out of business.
Yeah.
Because they had to pay that judgment. So the business went out of business. So what was the use in fighting a bad review?
Yeah, and the whole theory is, too, and this would be a great way if they said that, oh, now that it's gotten really popular, we're really damaged. Well, the reason it got really popular is because of your own actions. Mm-hmm. You're the ones who brought this into the public spotlight.
Yeah. So,
otherwise, it would have been just a review on, you know, whatever. So
that's exactly right.
One of the problems with these anti-slap kind of laws and things like that is, and there's a real fear, is that if they're too broad, that they're actually going to limit people's access to the courts when there actually is a problem where they're able to sue. Mm-hmm. So that's one kind of concern. That's the other side of the coin. You know, coins always have two sides, generally.
A head and a tail?
A head and a tail. Sometimes on the side. I've never seen that happen before, but in theory it could happen, I guess.
The theory of relativity. It's a relative side.
Do you know what barratry is?
Barratry?
Yeah.
Barratry. I know what a baritone is. I bet it's not the same thing.
No, it's not. It is actually a legal term and has several meanings, but in common law, barratry is the offense committed by people who are overly officious in instigating or encouraging prosecution of groundless litigation, or who bring repeated or persistent acts of litigation for the purposes of profit or harassment.
Mm.
And actually, barratry is a criminal offense in some states.
Yeah, I've read about people that file all these frivolous lawsuits for everything they can. Mm-hmm. They've always got all kinds of lawsuits and people, and that's probably why that was enacted, because of those kind of people.
Well, I think it's actually an old term. It's common law, so basically it was something that was probably passed down from England, and there's probably a long history of it. So, but there are probably the laws on the books today are as a result of that as well. But I'd actually never heard of that term before.
Nobody likes a serial sewer.
No, if you are meritorious, that might mean you sue a lot. I don't know.
That's not meritorious.
No, they would not. Meritorious lawsuits would not be meritorious lawsuits.
Now, I did find...
Go ahead and coin that phrase.
I did find one occasion where the company that was upset about the bad review did win. And they sued, they got their money and their court costs and lawyer costs.
Who's that?
Well, it was an employee of a Quincy, Massachusetts jewelry store has to pay $34,500 after writing a negative Yelp review of a rival store.
Wow.
So what happened was he worked at a jewelry store and there was a couple of other jewelry stores owned by a particular family that were doing better than them.
Mm-hmm.
So he decided that he would be clever to help with their sales. He would write some bad reviews about the other jewelry store to try to get people to not go there and come to his. So he wrote in there about their stuff not being good, it's not real, you know, things like that.
It's the perfect crime.
Yeah. But I guess he put his real name on there or something because they figured out it was him and that he had never even purchased anything at the store, so it wasn't a real review. He was just writing that to try to drive business over to his store.
Yeah, that sounds like a pretty easy case to prove.
So when that came in, they said, well, you know, this is false because you didn't do any business there.
Yeah.
So these things you wrote were not true. You maliciously did this to them. So he had to pay $34,500 for his misdeeds.
I wonder how they proved the damages for that.
Well, I think most of that $34,500 was court and lawyer fees.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of it was, I mean, the damages were probably something like $5,000 or $10,000. I don't think that they were big money in that.
Well, like we talked about defamation and slander before, truth is usually an absolute defense. So if basically the food comes out cold and you say it was cold, then you're fine. If it was bad and that's your opinion, you're probably fine there too.
Well, I mean, somebody says the food tasted terrible. What can you? What tastes terrible to one guy, somebody else loves, you know?
Now, here's where you might run into a problem. Well, I hear that owner has syphilis.
Yeah, that would probably be bad.
Yes. And you actually don't even have to show any damages for that because, as we talked about before, no damages need to be shown if a statement is basically alleging a crime or moral turpitude, a loathsome disease, such as syphilis, conduct that would adversely affect one's business or profession, or unchastity.
Well, let me ask you this. They came out and made public about the employee over in Kentucky at the Waffle House or whatever it was that had hepatitis A and said everybody that ate at the restaurant between this date and this date, you need to be checked.
Mm-hmm.
And now this guy that's running the place, he's having all kinds of problems because his business, nobody will go there anymore. Does he have a lawsuit because people said that? That was a communicable disease.
It is, and I think that would actually probably be a loathsome disease.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. Did the person actually have that?
Yeah, he did have it.
Well, I think he's probably...
But I don't think it matters, though, does it?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, if you... I thought that those were certain things that even if you had it, you're not allowed to talk about it in public.
No. You can talk about it in public. It's just the fact that...
It has to be true.
Yeah, it has to be true.
Oh, well, it was true.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's okay.
Well, see, I thought there's certain things that you can't say even if they are true.
Like what?
Well, and now there was laws on the books that said like you couldn't suggest that a woman was not a virgin.
Yeah.
And whether that was right or wrong, whether it was true or not true, it didn't matter. You couldn't say that. That was punishable.
Well, it is, and I mean... And we're going back in time here because I don't think there's been too many.
You don't think those laws are still in the book?
Yeah.
But I thought that venereal diseases or STDs or whatever were something too. It didn't matter if it was true or not. You're not allowed to spread that type of information.
Well, I think in a situation where it's something that is possibly communicable at a restaurant, I think that there is some sort of...
public health issue that overrides.
Yeah. I mean, there's some legitimate interest that's being piqued there, not just... trying to be like mean and say, you know, tell stories about somebody or something like that.
Yeah.
So I think there is some sort of protection to that speech because there is some value to it. And that's, again, what you look at when you're looking at First Amendment. Is there any value to it? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we here in America, we take free speech pretty seriously. So we don't want it. We try not to limit it and let everybody have their say or say what they want. Mm-hmm. So you have, it's kind of a real thin line trying to limit these things.
Well, I feel for that business owner, as a fellow small business owner, I feel for him with what's happened, because he really probably didn't have any control over that.
Well,
you know,
yeah.
But at the same time, you know, that's horrible that you'd go into a place like that to eat and you possibly get exposed to something like that.
Yeah.
So,
and I don't know how.
There are no winners in this.
I don't know how hepatitis is conveyed. We'd have to have Sydney on for that. Maybe we'll have her on one day.
I'm afraid to hear about how it'd be conveyed. It might be gross.
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
It usually involves fecal matter, I think.
So, that's going to bring us to Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy what different terms were that we talked about and see if he can remember what they mean. So,
nope.
the first term, what does SLAP stand for?
Legal anti-perset. It means that you can't tell people not to, you can't sue people for filing lawsuits about your negative review.
Well, that is what it means, but if you roll back the tape, and I said, what does SLAP stand for? It's an acronym.
I know it's an acronym.
Trying to play some sort of mind game with me here.
So, let's see. So
move to strike long. Is non-responsive.
So long a personal pal.
Strategic lawsuit against public participation.
That's what I meant.
Yeah. And what if you file a lawsuit or you prevail on a getting this slap law or slap lawsuit kicked out, what's it called?
Slap back.
I knew you had that one.
Slap back, Jack.
I knew you had that one in the bank.
I thought you made that up.
No.
I thought you were trying to make a dad joke.
No. No, that's true.
That's the fact, Jack.
What is barratry?
Barratry means you're of a litigious nature and you go around suing people all the time and you become a nuisance and they're frivolous and baseless lawsuits.
That's true. That's pretty much the definition of it, right on the nose. Now, what are the four areas of defamation where you don't have to show damages?
They're ones of like where people say you have a communicable disease, well, or a STD or something like that.
Loathsome.
Yeah, one of those kind of disease. A loathsome?
Loathsome.
Oh, loathsome?
Yep.
Oh, so it doesn't matter. It's not talking about where it's at. It's just talking about in general.
The other one would be a crime of moral turpitude, conduct that adversely affects somebody's business, or unchastity. Those are the four where you don't have to show damages if it's defamation.
It just is. If you'd said it, there's damages.
It is what it is.
You're damaged goods. Is that what you're saying?
That's right.
You talk about unchastity, then you're damaged goods.
Now, if you had any parting thoughts after researching this issue, what would you suggest a business owner do if they get a negative review?
I'd suggest you just grin and bear it. There's nothing you do, or the worst case scenario is you say, look, we're sorry you had a bad experience. If you would come back in and give us a second chance, we feel like we can do better.
All right. So you hear that out there, the person on August 1st, 2016, who gave us a bad review. If you give us another chance, we promise we're going to make it up to you. We're going to make it even longer show with more drivel.
I'm going to guess that person is not listening still after that from 2 years ago. They're not listening to us anymore. And if they are, well, then they're just downright mean for having left that and still listening to us. What are you doing? Find a day job.
Come on. Give us another shot. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually. This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Sperm. And I am
just a dude.